The time is 6 o'clock. This is Radio Ghana, the news presented by Lily Defo. In the headlines, mixed reaction to supplementary budget presented to Parliament by Finance Minister. UTAC welcomes government's approval of recruitment of more than 1,000 lecturers into public universities, but says the figure is inadequate. Stakeholders in maternal health care appeal to government to increase maternity leave for lactating mothers by 2 months. Former President of Malawi, Joyce Banda, challenges African leaders to embrace moral leadership. And Riek Machar replaced as Vice President of South Sudan. The news now in detail. The Finance Minister, Seth Debre, has requested Parliament to approve more than 1 billion Ghana cedis as supplementary budget for the 2016 financial year. He said the economy is getting better as debt-to-GDP ratio has fallen from 72% to 63% as of May 2016. Mr. Tepe was presenting the mid-year budget review to Parliament.
On the basis of the revised revenue and estimates, the revised 2016 budget will result in an overall budget deficit of 8.4 billion Ghana cedis, the same as the deficit figure in the original budget. This will ensure that the pace of public debt accumulation remains as envisaged in the 2016 budget. The revised budget deficit will be financed as usual from foreign and domestic sources, in an amount of 2.2 billion Ghana cedis and from foreign sources. Net domestic financing of the 2016 deficit is now estimated at 6.4 billion Ghana cedis. The revisions to the fiscal framework will result in a requirement of an appropriation of 51,998,055,121 Ghana cedis against an amount of 50,109,851,734 appropriated in the 2016 budget. Request for approval of supplementary estimates. As mentioned earlier in this presentation, the aim of this supplementary estimate is to seek parliamentary approval to commit additional resources outlined in this report to fund additional expenditures resulting from the revisions made to the 2016 budget. In this regard, we are requesting approval for a total amount of 1,888,203,387 Ghana cedis as supplementary estimates for the 2016 financial year. We have made progress in addressing the economic challenges and we are poised to enter a brighter medium-term era for the economy. We have remained focused despite the turbulent waters as evidenced in significant progress that has been made in all initiatives and also in all sectors of the economy.
Mr. Tepe said for the first time since the country was declared HIPC, government has been able to slow down the growth of debt to GDP ratio, adding that government is committed to reducing the debt level. Mr. Tepe explained that the shortfall in tax revenue is as a result of the decline in commodity prices. He gives the breakdown. Meanwhile, a Deputy Minister of Finance, Mrs. Mona Kotty, says the sinking fund has been a major asset of government in managing its liabilities. She said through the fund, the 2007 bond is being serviced. Mrs. Kotty was reacting to the mid-year supplementary estimate presented to Parliament by the Sector Minister, Seth Tepe. A member of the Finance Committee of Parliament, Dr. Mark Asede, said government is not doing enough to meet the IMF's requirement, thus making a delay in disbursing funds. The Executive Director of the Center for Economic Policy Analysis, CEPA, Dr. Joe Abbey, says the nation is not achieving its target under the domestic market due to excessive borrowing and lack of interest in the domestic bond market. Dr. Abbey blamed Ghana's present energy predicaments on failure to resource the VRA to enable it to pay its fuel supplies.
I have considerable problems because the line on the date of implementation of the provisional outcome for January to May, I think the tables have been drawn and there's a huge estimate of government revenue. You can trace it to non-tax revenue. What is being put there as what has been collected from January to May is bigger than what was programmed for the whole year. So there's something wrong. The result is that you are not talking about the deficit funded. You're talking of a huge surplus, which is not credible. So there's something wrong with the tables that have got about the outcome for January to May. So the case for, and so it's not clear to me whether the government is requesting authority to spend 1.9 billion more because they found the revenue, or whether they are saying that there rather has been a revenue shortfall and therefore we're going to borrow. And these are important because if we're going to borrow, then we have some prior question. But right now, the domestic bond market, we are not getting people going there and enabling us to achieve the target of borrowing that put out there. The bond market. We're getting people coming there and bidding less than the target. So we are not achieving our target on the domestic market. We had also planned to go and borrow on the Eurobond market. We went on this non-offer roadshow. Kenya went at the same time. The market reaction to us was not the most favorable. The yield that the Ghana bonds are trading are too high. So if you're going to borrow some more, and are you going to borrow outside, or are you going to be borrowing? Look at the non-tax revenue. You find that it cannot be what has been put. But instead of it being gotten and correct, it goes all the way to declare that we're going to be affecting a huge surplus. The root of the problem is not so much whether our generating capacity is up to scratch or not. The root of the problem is that we are not able to provide DRA to the resources to pay for the fuel that is important to generate the power for us. So it's because of this DRA, it's crippling our own Ghana gas company, because DRA has taken gas and has not paid for it. So how would the Ghana gas company also pay its bills?
Executive Director of the Center for Economic Policy Analysis, SEPA, Dr. Joe Abe. And away from the budget, the National Secretary of UTAC, Dr. Samuel Nkubang, has welcomed government's approval of the recruitment of more than 1,000 lecturers for public universities. He was, however, quick to add that they would have preferred that more lecturers were selected from the list they presented. Dr. Nkubang said, considering the number of deceased lecturers and those who have resigned, the recruitment of more than 1,000 lecturers is inadequate for the universities.
Generally, I would say it is a piece of good news, but we cannot guarantee that it is sufficient unless management of the public sector universities agrees too. We expected the ministry as well as government to give the free hand to be able to recruit as and when the need arises, not to have to go through the hurdle of having to get national clearance before recruitment. Over the last 4 years, we have noticed that that hurdle has caused the universities not to be able to recruit. And so we've had people retiring, we've had people dying, we've had people resigning, and all of those spaces are vacant. But in 2018, vacancies or spaces announced by government, we expect that that would mean that if it is only for lecturers, then it will mean also for the 10 public sector universities. And as to whether or not that is what all of those 10 public sector universities require in order to run efficiently is what has been provided, we are not sure unless we get confirmation from management of all of those universities. We know, for example, that the University of Ghana required over 700. We are getting just 200. The of Education, Winneba, required over 300. They got less than 200. So the 1,018 vacancies that have been declared, I'm sure that even inadequate for the persons that the universities have already sponsored to PhDs on the basis of quality. The universities are targeted to come and serve them. And so over the last 3 years, universities already had sponsored some people to PhDs, and then in the hope that they can retain them to teach the university, because of the blockade, they were unable to recruit them. And so I know, for example, that University of Ghana, over the last 2 years, had engaged up to about 150 people that were paid from internally donated funds. And we were expecting that at least this would enclose them as well as give us more room to operate.
Dr. Samuel Nkubang is National Secretary of UTAC. Vice President Kwesi Emesa-Arthur has charged academia to collaborate with policy formulators to bridge the gap between theory and practice. This will not only enhance teaching and learning, but also enable graduates to blend the two as a workplace. Vice President Emesa-Arthur said this when he inaugurated an ultra-modern auditorium with a 1,000 seating capacity for the Economics Department of the University of Ghana, Lagos. He urged the university authorities to maintain the facility to serve and equip generations of students with world-class knowledge. Sethiye reports.
The multi-purpose facility also has a 600 seating capacity foyer, 8 seminar rooms, 2 computer laboratories with 40 seating capacity each, and a secretariat for the management of the facility and other offices. Former Governor of the Bank of Ghana, Dr. Paul Akwa, initiated the construction of the building. Vice President Emisa Asa, who succeeded Dr. Akwa, continued with the processes and cut the sod for the construction in 2011. He said the bank decided to complete the project as its social corporate responsibility. This is because the Economics Department of the University of Ghana has for years been a valuable human resource center for the bank.
This structure, I hope, will improve the curriculum, because as a former student, as a former senior member in this department, when I got into the public service, I realized that there were serious gaps in the training. We did a lot of theoretical stuff. The applied side was weak. So when you got in there, you then had to learn afresh some of the things that should have been told. So I hope that we'll have a situation where professors and lecturers from the department can spend some time with us in policy formulation, in various other applied areas of the science, so that the teaching will be so improved.
The governor of the Bank of Ghana, Dr. Abdul Nashiru Sahaku, said boarding facilities must improve the university's physical and learning environment. He said that alone cannot instill the vision and passion that guides the university's development. A good interaction between the lecturers and the students, he said, will make the difference and ensure that the new building enhances teaching and learning.
We expect this department to provide quality education and relevant courses that empower students to adopt new initiatives that would benefit the country as a whole. Bank of Ghana recognizes the Department of Economics' role in various ways. We regard this department as a major partner towards promotion of financial literacy that we believe as necessary to achieving a sound monetary and financial policy support. We want to educate some of the best economists in the world, because they are the future of the country's economic management.
The Vice Chancellor of the University of Ghana, Professor Ernest Aiti, said there are comprehensive maintenance measures to ensure that all facilities are given priority attention to prolong their lifespan.
The university is extremely grateful for this facility. We will put it to extremely good use. It should enhance the image of the Department of Economics and all of the University of Ghana. This facility should make many differences possible for the university and for the department. And I do hope that in the years to come, we will prove to all that it has been a worthy investment.
The head of the Department of Economics of the University of Ghana, Professor Peter Corti, regretted that the first phase of the project took 5 years to be completed and hoped that the second phase would be executed in record time. The chairman of the Governing Council of the University of Ghana, Professor Samuel Dakeba, joined the vice president to inaugurate the building and also unveiled plaques which acknowledge the contributions of past and present governor of the Bank of Ghana and some heads of departments of the university. Sethiye, reporting for Radio Ghana.
The former president of Malawi, Mrs. Joyce Banda, has called on political leaders in Africa to embrace the new world order where power lies more with the people than the leader. She decried authoritarian rule and challenged leaders of today to learn the qualities of moral leadership where humility, honesty, and selflessness are integral parts. Mrs. Banda was delivering a lecture at the University of Cape Coast to mark the fourth Atamil's commemorative lectures.
Yes, the world needs a new leadership order in the face of the power switch. The type of leadership premised on morality and the realization that one serves at the pledge of those that grant him or her the mandate to exercise power and authority. The kind of leadership that serves in the interest of the people. The kind of leadership that is inspired and motivated by people that one serves, because one recognizes and fully accepts that power is with the people themselves. In short, as the power shifts from leaders to the masses, the world has to fully embrace moral and servant leadership. It is a form of leadership model that provides a potent mechanism for managing the shifting of power from leaders to the laity, for a very simple reason, that moral leadership is a kind of leadership that earnestly defines leaders as servants of the people and not the other way around. Sadly though, out there, there is a widespread view that leaders, especially those in politics and businesses, have lost their moral purpose. Leaders who occupy political positions, rather than using national resources to promote the well-being of their people, they use their political offices and positions to plunder the wealth of their countries and for their own self-enrichment. The shifting of power from leaders to the masses cannot be ignored. It signals the coming in of a new world order in terms of leadership and power and people power. It's a paradigm shift that calls for necessary changes in leadership. As leaders, the earlier we accept this reality, the better, lest we risk being left behind or face the full brunt of the people's power. As leaders, the earlier we realize and fully accept that days of authoritative leadership are long gone, the better.
Mrs. Banda eulogized late President Arthur Mills, describing him as a man who understood what being a president was all about. She said late President Mills was one who ruled with zeal and determination. Above all, he was one who drew a parallel between spirituality and leadership. Madame Banda admitted that fighting corruption as an African leader is a challenging task and needs self-determination and strong will. She therefore called on the international community, especially advanced countries, to lend moral support to African leaders who are trying their best to fight corruption in their countries.
As former president myself, I don't want to give the impression that fighting corruption is easy. If I had not conducted the forensic audit by a distinguished foreign audit firm, I would be in jail by now. So fighting corruption, you are fighting very powerful people. I do not know if there are many leaders on the African continent who have conducted forensic audit in their government during their time. I am proud that on the continent of Africa, we now find a new crop of leaders committed to fight corruption. For example, Rwanda, Kenya, Tanzania, Nigeria, Senegal, Ghana, just to mention a few. My appeal is that when our foreign partners support such leaders on the continent, there's need to support and motivate them. Treat those leaders like victors, not victims, as this discourages other leaders to do the same.
Former Malawian President Joyce Banda delivering the fourth Atamal's commemorative lecture. The 10th International Conference of the Stop Cervical Breast and Prostate Cancer Initiative in Africa has opened in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa, with more than 1,000 participants across the continent attending. The First Lady, Lolita Mahama, and her colleague First Ladies from Kenya, Chad, Uganda, and the host country Ethiopia are attending the conference. Mrs. Mahama, who is also the president of the Organization of African First Ladies, OFLA, and an advocate of stopping cervical and breast cancer, will be sharing Ghana's success story in the prevention and treatment of these diseases and the way forward. Speaking at the opening of the conference, the Prime Minister of the Federal Republic of Ethiopia, Haile Mariam Desalegn, asked African First Ladies to intensify their campaign towards the prevention and eradication of cervical and breast cancer in their countries, with focus on early detection and treatment. Ivana Tilegu filed this report from Addis Ababa.
Ghana's First Lady Lordina Mahama has always been a strong advocate in the fight against breast, cervical and prostate cancer, which she has carried to about 7 regions of the country. This she has done by organizing periodic screening and medical outreach programs that has benefited more than 3,000 people. Speaker after speaker at the conference described cancer of all types as serious, causing more than 8 million deaths annually than deaths caused by HIV/AIDS and malaria. This is because people do not attach seriousness to its early detection and treatment. It is estimated there will be 50% increase in cancer cases in Africa by 2030. These alarming figures therefore inform the decision by African First Ladies to do more in the fight against cervical, breast and prostate cancer. The Ethiopian Prime Minister, Haile Mariam Desalegn, said even as African First Ladies intensify awareness, they should also drum home the need for early detection, as that is one of the cost-effective ways of reducing the disease in the long term.
Cost-effective interventions must also be made available in an equitable manner through access to information and education about cancer at the primary health care level. We must work round the clock in in order to make sure that anyone who needs treatment can access health care, including the necessary medications for managing the illness of cancer. First ladies of Africa, I am well aware of the fact that you have the ears of mothers in your respective countries and that you are resourced in a position to gain the trust and confidence of mothers. Therefore, I call upon all First Ladies of Africa to intensify the campaign that you have started against cancer and other reproductive health problems. You should involve relevant stakeholders, including political leaders, your husbands mainly, and develop the partners in your indispensable endeavor. I want to assure you that Africa will remain forever grateful to you for your magnificent contributions.
First Lady of the Federal Republic of Ethiopia, Roman Tesfaye Abney, spoke strongly about the cost of cancer drugs. She said cancer drugs are very expensive, which the average person cannot afford.
We African First Ladies have realized more than ever we have an important part to play in changing this dismaying situation. By working hand in hand with the formal health structure as well as non-state actors, we can call for stronger policy attention and resource allocation to fight cancer in our respective countries. We need to advocate strongly for a much higher level of investment in cancer treatment and care facilities, as well as the training of specialists. We should persistently continue to foster partnership with the private sector to make sure that Africans can afford treatment drugs, pain medications, as well as comprehensive and patient-centered cancer treatment and care. Just the other day, I learned that cancer treatment drugs for children cost up to $3,000 or more. What does this mean in a country where the average per capita income is below $700? Should a mother just watch her child perish knowing only if she had this much money she could have saved her baby? This again is the story of Africa that has to change.
The opening of the 10th Stop Cervical, Breast and Prostate Cancer in Africa conference also saw the recognition of the Prime Minister of Ethiopia as Africa's goodwill ambassador for women and children's health for 2016 to 2017.
Yvonne Atilego sent us reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Stakeholders in maternal health care have appealed to government to increase the number of days for maternity leave for lactating mothers. They advocate the period be increased from the current 12 weeks to 14 weeks for a start, or 6 months as prescribed by the ILO. National Coordinator for Breastfeeding, Mazozi Unisake, who spoke on behalf of stakeholders at a media briefing in Accra, said the extension will encourage lactating mothers to exclusively breastfeed their babies. She said statistics on breastfeeding, which is 52% as of 2014, is abysmal. A report by Antoinette Abba.
Barriers such as inadequate maternity leave, lack of access to skilled breastfeeding counseling, and inadequate information from health providers are some of the factors making it difficult to practice exclusive breastfeeding for 6 months. According to the stakeholders, breastfeeding not only provides the foundation for lifelong health and well-being of children, but also babies who are exclusively fed have 2.6 higher intelligence quotient than non-breastfed babies. In this vein, the National Coordinator of Breastfeeding, Mrs. Unisaki, believes more mothers and employers must be educated on the benefits of exclusive breastfeeding and, more importantly, encourage mothers to practice it. She said employers must also set up crèches at their workplaces to allow breastfeeding within working hours, as being practiced at Databank, MTN and Barclays headquarters.
If we sit together, employers association, the Ministry of Health, other civil society organizations, to find a way of increasing the maternity leave from the 3 months to any, I think, appreciable limit. If the 3 months, fine. WHO is recommending to 3 months exclusive breastfeeding. But people also keep saying that it will not be possible for the 6 months because then the employers will also be up in arms against it. But I think talking to dialoguing, I think we'll find a way of doing it. And corporate organizations can also provide crashes around their workplace, even if it's not within their office. If we have people closing crashes around the workplaces like ministries, well, we have a lot of women there, secretaries, officers and the rest. That can also help.
The Greater Accra Acting Deputy Director for Public Health, Dr. John Yabani, called on all the splinter groups in maternal health to collaborate so that they can achieve the intended result.
In fact, from the beginning of the year to this time, we have been recruiting midwives, community health nurses. Recently, we have also trained community health workers who are doing masses because we have realized the importance of linking the health facility with the community. So that when we initiate the breastfeeding at the health facility, the woman and the baby are discharged home. We expect a follow-up to support the mother and baby to settle down.
The National Breastfeeding Week is from Monday, August 1 to Friday, August 5. The main event will be held on Tuesday, 2nd August at Cofodia Jackson Park.
Antoinette Aba, Southside Report. The Northern Regional Minister, Abdullah Abubakar, has paid a visit to the family of a nursing mother who lost her life in yesterday's floods to console and sympathize with them. The late Mrs. Alassan Azara got drowned following torrential rains that hit the Tamale metropolis. A number of buildings and farmlands were submerged by the floods. The rain, which lasted for about 5 hours, affected areas including Kuyavula, Dungu, Kamvele, Sangarigu, Kuku, and some parts of Chiriponi and Mamprugu Mwadori. Mohammed Fugu, Saldas Report.
The regional minister was accompanied by the regional NADMU coordinator, Alhaji Abdullahi Silimboma, DCE for Sagnarigu, Al-Hassan Mohammed Sorogudo, and some officers from the security agencies. He appealed to the bereaved family to take heart as they mourn the death of their relatives. The family head, Hassan Adam, expressed appreciation for the gesture. He urged government to construct drainage systems in the area to avoid such unfortunate incidents. The regional minister, Abdullah Abubakar, advised the residents to avoid building on waterways. He pledged government's commitment to provide the victims with relief items after an assessment by NADMU. He gave the assurance that drainage systems will be constructed to ensure free flow of water during downpour.
Mohammed Fugu's report. And on the foreign front, South Sudan's President Salva Kiir has removed Riek Machar as first vice president 2 weeks after the rival leaders' forces clashed in the capital. Mr. Machar has not been seen since the clashes, which left about 300 people dead and threatens to revive a civil war that has killed tens of thousands. Mr. Machar has been replaced by Tabang Deng Gai, a former peace negotiator. Former presidential nominee Bernie Sanders has urged his supporters to come together and vote for Mrs. Hillary Clinton. In a speech at the convention of the Democratic Party, the Vermont senator received a 3-minute standing ovation when he took the stage in Philadelphia. He said Hillary Clinton must become the next president of the United States. And now to end the news, the main points again. There have been mixed reactions to the supplementary budget presented by Finance Minister Seth Thekwe to Parliament. While some say government has missed strides by implementing policies like the sinking fund in managing the country's liabilities, others also think government is not doing enough to meet the IMF's requirement that's making its delay in disbursing funds. The national president of UTAC, Dr. Samuel Inkubang, has embraced government's approval of the employment of more than 1,000 lecturers for public universities. He was speaking on a current affairs program behind the news. And South Sudan's President Salva Kiir has removed Riek Machar as first vice president 2 weeks after the rival leaders' forces clashed in the capital. He's been replaced by a former peace negotiator. But that's the news from Radio Ghana.